Final hour of Overdrive. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes alongside Dave Pullen. We're up on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on television on TSN 4. Breaking news to end the 5 o'clock hour. The NHL and NHLPA reaching a memorandum of understanding that extends the current CBA for another 4 years. So this CBA now runs to the 2025-2026 season. Also agreeing on the return to play protocol, and that would see training camps begin in a week and games begin on August 1st. Bob McKenzie reporting a lot of the details on Canada Day, but a lot of those details still coming out today. But this is good for the game, Dave, in a time where so unpredictable. We still don't know if the postseason will be executed and will crown a Stanley Cup champion. That is the hope. But that is just one major thing to get out of the way and now move forward as you try to grow the game, and you also try to take care of what's happened over the last 3 months.
Well, it really is a major, major accomplishment by both sides, and I give both sides credit. On March 12th, Mark, when we started that day, and that day, so Rudy Gobert tested positive on the night of the 11th. And on the 12th, I got a call to come in early and be at the podium with Gino Retta, and then they moved us over to a panel. And it was Pierre, Dregs, myself, and James. And we didn't really know where we were going. And you know, they'd keep coming back to you through that. We were on the air for six or seven hours. And one thing that kept coming to my mind was, we had no idea what was ahead of us. What a unique opportunity for the NHL and the NHLPA to forge an entirely different level of relationship. And, it had been well documented and acrimonious, and the labor stoppings and, the 2004-05 season being wiped right out, and different labor situations. Well, what an opportunity. And to the credit of Gary Bettman and Bill Daly and their group, and Matthew Schneider and Donald Fehr and their group, they got it done.
Yeah.
And so, they will look back, is my guess, as this is the busiest time of their entire tenures. The absolute busiest time. And so much of the planning was the unknown. But while the planning for the unknown was going on, so was the CBA planning. And to their credit, early in the process, they realized that what an opportunity to take this, extend it, and almost bend the new parts of the CBA into the pandemic and what we're dealing with now. And both were necessary to get it done. That looking ahead to the future and how unknown it is will help us get through the short-term unknown. So credit to all those involved. A really, really strong accomplishment sitting with a new six-year deal on the table.
And what has been the legacy of Gary Bettman to so many, whether it's fair or not, being the lockout commissioner? And
what if he gets cheered when he brings the Stanley Cup out?
I don't know if we're going to go that far.
I might. Yeah, I might throw that out there.
Maybe that's a Jerry's percentage.
We'll get Jerry. I was just going to say, we'll get Jerry's percentages on it. We'll put our best guy on it.
Goodness.
Yeah, I think this is the first Jerry's percentage. What are the odds that
he'll say, I got cheered, or I'm going to get cheered.
Better than any other of the major leagues pull this off. Accomplished, tighter. It has a chance. It has a real chance to be the model for the other teams. Rather than watching the other sports and saying, why can't we do that? It has a chance with the two Canadian hubs, being named, and the different, low rates of COVID in those cities, and watching and learning from everybody else. And by the way, what note did we get just before we went on air about the English Premier League getting a full
Their latest set of testing, which is testing a huge group of players.
2,000 players, I believe.
Or 1,900. Players. Yeah, something around there. Yeah. Not one positive test.
Bubble.
In the bubble. Now, they've been in the bubble for a little bit. That is the plan, and I guess the hope when they get this going, that they're going to positive test to begin, this phase four, right?
Because everybody's coming from everywhere.
Right. The hope, again, I emphasize, the hope is, once you get into the middle of the first round and the second round of the playoffs, that those numbers are so low that maybe you get to zero and you're not talking about positive cases.
And how long has the Premier League been going? Is that 4 weeks now? 5 weeks?
I want to say four, just under four. The Bundesliga was first. Serie A, EPL. So, but it's been a body work there. I should point out Pierre LeBrun tweeting out the players' executive board had a conference call begin around 5:15 p.m. Eastern. Up to them to decide if the proposed return to play and CBA agreement is good to go, and proceed then to a league-wide player vote, which could then take up to 72 hours. Bob McKenzie also saying that if all goes well, the NHL and NHLPA could have the CBA extension and return to play phase 3-4 protocols ratified by the end of the business week, but that's still TBD. So there you have
very positive news in a world we haven't had a lot of positive news lately. This is for the sport of hockey. Very, very positive looking forward.
And from a player's perspective, you know, these are things that you want to talk about, you want to hammer out, and then you want to be able to not have to worry about it for 6 years. I mean, that's the beauty of it, right? Like this.
Yeah.
This
is not to their credit. Yeah. To their credit, they put the other piece, the return to play, ahead of the CBA.
Right. Which we kind of joked about is the opposite of what baseball did. And I know baseball was not negotiating a new CBA, although this could really kind of extend into what their CBA negotiations are like in a year and a half. But they talked about the money before they talked about the semantics and the testing and how we're going to execute this season. The NBA has been the opposite, and really the NHL has been applauded for being patient, and also the process that they've gone through over the last month or so to get to this phase.
Yeah, it's really, really encouraging to get this news today and to get it early enough before the July 13th. Now, you know, now you've got a handful of days. And once again, this is a critical time as the players, you know, sit and really ponder over this now when it gets to the individual players to make their decisions. And before the break, we talked about how individually each player has a different decision to make, you know, but he's acting in the best interest of the group as a whole. And, you know, and hopefully this moves forward.
Now, would the players try to make an amendment and maybe try to add something, or are we already past that stage? Like,
I think we're past that stage.
Okay, because I'm just thinking about, you know, players want the business to grow as much as possible, right? Because they are giving up so much, and the escrow is obviously going to be so big for the next couple of years. Are there ways for us collectively to increase HRR, which was such a big, you know, topic in the last negotiations that led to a lockout and almost cost them the whole season?
And one thing, Mark, is the mechanism that controls that inflator. First of all, the artificial inflator of increasing it by 5% during the summers is why the cap is as high as it is. I mean, it just is. That's why it's up there. Yeah. That artificial inflator was used for a number of years by the players. And so I think the mechanisms involved, they're more sophisticated now. You've dealt with them for longer. You can better put into place a mechanism that controls that escrow and makes it more palatable. I think that's the best way to put it.
And with more on today's breaking news, we're joined by our hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun. Pierre, thanks so much for joining us. I'm sure that you've been busy and you've been on your phone, but you know, this has to be ratified, but in the end, this is a very good day for hockey.
Yeah, no, listen, I've been covering the NHL for 25 years, and I've never reported on a peacetime CBA. So
that says something, doesn't it, right?
Like, you know, but again, it has to be ratified, and let's give the players their voice. I mean, you hear grumbling from some players. Is it going to be enough? I don't think so. I think it's going to pass, but you know, one step at a time. The players' executive board, which is made up of the 31 player reps, as you guys know, they started a call at 5:15 p.m. Eastern time, and it sounds like it's going to be a long call as they go over the entire return to play and CBA tonight. And then they decide in their own internal vote if it's a green light to then pass this on, the whole package, to the entire player membership. And that vote can take up to 72 hours. So if it's a yes vote by the end of the week, then there's a new CBA, assuming, of course, the Board of Governors doesn't vote it down, which I highly doubt. They tend to you know, Gary Bettman mm-hmm. tends to have a feel for his owners before presenting these types of big documents in front of them. So we'll see how the players react, but I suspect that this should be ratified by the end of the week.
Pierre, you've been on this story throughout, and I know there were stages during my career when it could be argued that the executive board wasn't representative of the player group as a whole. Do you have a feel for that, whether this executive board, if they were to put the positive stamp on it, is pretty representative of the league as a whole? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, I mean, I think to go back to the origins of all this, Pooley, people forget the both sides have actually done a lot of groundwork on a CBA extension last summer. And I think it just got lost in the headlines because it wasn't the same kind of urgency. But because there was that window last September for each side to decide whether they wanted to opt out of the CBA this September, mm-hmm. two sides have actually done, I think, more groundwork than people realize. Now, the pandemic provided a whole new scope to this, right? And the kind of urgency where they know that they can't have a labor situation in 2 years after struggling to get through the economic damage, and there will be damage from the pandemic. So I think with that in mind, you know, both in the return to play and in the CBA extension that's on the table now, there's been a level of collaboration between the PA and the league that I have never seen in my entire career. And I think it comes from, frankly, from fear and from recognizing that now is not the time to sabotage each other with so much on the line. And it's certainly not what we saw in baseball, but it's what we saw in hockey. So, again, we don't want to be careful here because the players have a big vote, mm-hmm. both at the executive board level and also the players league-wide, and we'll see. Democracy will speak, but my gut feeling and anecdotally is that it will be a yes vote, and that's huge for this sport, which obviously lagged behind the other big three in the top four in North America, to have its house in order as it tries to navigate these completely unprecedented and uncharted waters here over the next couple of years.
TSN's hockey insider Pierre Lebrun joining us on Overdrive to discuss the big news this afternoon. It broke about 20 minutes ago. The NHLPA and NHL reached a tentative agreement on the return to play program, but also a CBA extension. From the player side, Pierre, how much have you heard from their side about trying to expand what HRR is?
Yeah, that's been a key part of the dialogue for sure, and that's why the return to the Olympics, I think, will be seen, and I should mention that even though we first reported that last week. I just got an email from a league source. Just, you never know, at the last minute sometimes things can change from what we knew last week to this week, but in the proposed CBA that was today agreed on by both sides, pending ratification, Olympic participation for the next two Olympics is in there. And the PA sees that as a real important way. Okay, they're not going to make money off the Olympics, but in terms of the exposure of the sport and ways that they can grow NHL revenues off the momentum of those two Olympics and into bigger international, into other international events that are controlled by the PA and the league, whether it's World Cup or other events, I think the PA is pretty bullish on what the return of the Olympics will mean in that scope, mm-hmm. in terms of growing the sport and ultimately, whether directly or indirectly, growing revenues. But that's right. I mean, you could talk all day about reducing escrow for players, and obviously, you know, if I was a player, I'd want to pay 0% escrow. I'd want to get 100% of my paycheck. But part of that is not just trying to limit escrow, which the next couple of years it will be limited in the CBA agreement, but it's also just growing revenues. If you grow revenues, then 50-50 is an easier thing to do in terms of splitting the pie.
Pierre, in your mind, and once again talking to the players and the agents, is escrow going to be the biggest conversation point amongst the players right now? Because in many ways, they're the reason for the escrow. They had the false inflator mm-hmm. for a number of years that got those free agents the big contracts that they got.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that I think there are items in return to play that are going to make some players think hard. I mean, don't forget that. I think there are players who just are going to feel unsafe about coming back to play, and don't forget that this agreement is return to play slash CBA. You don't have one without the other.
Yeah.
And don't lose sight of that. That's a pretty big part of all this. So you're asking me, Pooley, yeah, escrow's always in the crosshairs for a lot of players. But in the here and now, I would say probably just as much of a burning issue is perhaps some players who simply feel it's unsafe to come back and play. Again, I think that the majority of players are going to sign off on returning to play. But I still think there's you know, a group of players that are not going to feel right about it. Some of them will vote no because of it, and others will exercise their right to opt out of the tournament, which is part of this agreement as well.
But the timing of the opt-out is tomorrow night at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that doesn't coincide coincide with the ratification of the deal.
Well, yeah, but I think you could probably, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm just going to go on the side of logic here, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. And I would think that if you're a player that signified you were going to opt out, if it's a yes vote, you know what I mean?
Right.
You could probably, logic would dictate that people understand what you mean here.
Well, there'd be no hockey if there's no ratification.
Right.
You wouldn't have to opt out.
Exactly.
And Pierre, we've been privy to some of the details in terms of the return to play. And if you haven't seen it, go to tsn.ca. Frank Saravalli has really done a good job with all of those points. And, you know, it's interesting, the number who are in the bubble, and each team will be permitted to bring a maximum of 52 individuals. How much was that a sticking point in terms of the negotiation and how many people that teams were able to get into this hub?
I think it's a bigger deal for the teams than it is for the players right now. And I apologize if you hear sizzling. I'm trying to navigate barbecuing for the kids here while I'm talking to you.
That's why you're the best, Pierre. I don't know too many hockey insiders that can do that. So I like it medium rare usually. So just in case.
Well, today
your hot dog medium rare.
Yeah, it's sausages today here at the lake. No, I think I've heard more grief from teams about the limit of people in the bubbles. Mm-hmm. You know, I think teams are, I talked to a GM today who says, man, like, it's leading to difficult decisions, people that he feels are quite important in the organization that he may not bring along to the hubs because of all the other people that clearly have to be there. And so I would tell you that it's less on the player side and more on the team side in terms of, you know, not quite understanding, you know, why certain people won't be able to be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pierre, we'll let you get back to your barbecuing. We appreciate you jumping on here. It's big news today. Like I said, it's good news for hockey, for the NHL. The NHLPA, again, does need to be ratified, but, you know, labor peace. We were talking about the legacy of Gary Bettman and whether it's fair or unfair. He's been called the lockout commissioner. This will be a big part of his resume if he's able to get this through this week and during unprecedented times, able to get an extension on the CBA.
And honestly, if it is ratified by both sides and it's a yes vote, I mean, you really have to tip your cap to the amount of work that would need to be done to get a CBA extension in the last couple of months. It really is crazy. I mean, you know, I don't know quite how I feel about return to play, to be honest with you. We'll see. But in terms of getting a CBA done, that is, you know, again, if it's a yes vote, mm-hmm. I think it's unbelievable to think that they started to get at this, you know, 6-7 weeks ago. It's really amazing.
Yeah, to think about, if a couple months ago, if we said we're going to get a new CBA or an extended CBA and the NHL is going back to the Olympics, I don't know how many people were believing that a couple months ago. So that's, this is great. It was great having you on the show. Get back to the barbecue. Don't burn it. And
I think I am burning it.
Okay. Get on that, buddy. We appreciate you coming on.
All right. See you guys.
There's our hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun.
You know, kids are so funny, Mark. They don't like marks on their hot dogs, right?
Right.
Like, so I developed a style where I cook them like vertically rather than horizontally across the grid. so that it would show less of the I had daughters instead of sons, and maybe sons would like grill marks on their hot dogs, but it was like they wanted a perfectly barbecued hot dog with no marks on it.
Right. Well, that's why kids like microwaved hot dogs is weird.
That's right. So maybe Pierre got distracted a little bit there when the sizzle was going on and said, I can't be putting marks on these sausages.
Well, it's going to be so funny that he's going to sit down to the table with his family or whoever he has over, and he plumps down the meat, and it's all charred, and they're like,
he's going to blame you.
They're going to go,
clearly.
What happened? He's like, I'll tell you what happened. The NHL and the NHLPA have a tentative agreement and had to go on overdrive, okay?
And I'm going back to work.
And don't complain. Where's my suit?
I was going to say, it was the best reception he's had from the cottage. He might have been out in a canoe in the middle of the lake if he hadn't told us he was on the grill. So.
That's true. That's true. So, anyways, this is great news. And, the HRR and players trying, like, you think of Seattle, you know, and the expansion, and that has always been, you know, a pot of money that goes to the owners. How do the players get their hands on that?
Yeah, and it's always interesting to pour through a document after the fact and see what was a priority and what wasn't. And just as I think you and Andy, when you were talking about the Olympics, it wasn't that anyone thought we weren't going to the Olympics. They just didn't think it would ever be a question. We were going to the Olympics. Why would somebody stop that?
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was, you know, overlooked at a critical point, not put in a collective bargaining agreement, and all of a sudden Connor McDavid hasn't played in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And, you know, and with none in the foreseeable future that he was going to play in. And so, you know, to see the best on best and have that ability, you know, is really, really good. And so just one of the bonuses of this collective bargaining agreement will be the fact that, you know, it looks like if it's all ratified, mm-hmm. you know, in 2022, we'll see a best-on-best tournament.
Stability in hockey. We could be getting that in the middle of a pandemic. In terms of...
Used to be an oxymoron.
It did. And then you think of baseball and how they've had such labor peace since the 94 strike. I don't know what's, you know, going to happen in a year and a half from now when their CBA comes up. But one thing we do know, they're trying to play a 60-game season. They just released the schedule, or at least some details of it. The Blue Jays, two bits of bad news. Their strength of schedule is 567, one of the worst in baseball. And also that they'll be playing 7 of 10 games versus the Rays in Florida. So we're getting some of the information there from baseball. Let's take a break. When we return, Jared Karabas from Barstool Sports, an MLB writer for them, we'll talk Blue Jays, we'll talk baseball, the testing mess that was happening throughout the league today, that and much more. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Dave, everything's happening. This is one of those shows.
That's a good thing to do.
It's a very good thing.
It's a great thing.
Here we are complaining for the last few months. Nothing's happening, and now everything's happening. If you're just joining us, the NHL, NHLPA have tentatively agreed on a return to play and also a CBA extension. And Major League Baseball is announcing their schedule. And we are still trying to find out the Jays' schedule, but we do have a couple little factoids. They will play... they will take two trips to Florida to face the Rays. So 7 out of the 10 games will be in Florida. And their start to the season, so the first week of the season, will be the third toughest schedule if you base the records off of 2019. And with more on baseball and the Blue Jays, we're joined by Jared Karabas from Barstool Sports. Jared, how are you today?
Hi.
Do we have Jared?
Hello?
Hey, Jared, how are you?
How's it going, guys? How are we doing?
We're good. We're really happy to have you on the show. And it really seems like you're endearing yourself to Blue Jay fans lately.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a number of the new Blue Jays on the podcast. Josh Donaldson is a good friend. I know that he's still very much loved in Toronto. Marcus Stroman, another guy. I'm very excited for what's happening with baseball in Toronto. And I've said many times that the Blue Jays are good. That is one of the most electric cities going in the league.
Well, and you saw it in 2015 and 16 where, you know, we all up in Toronto and Canada kind of complain about the dome being a little archaic and it's a concrete jungle, but it gets loud and the atmosphere is great. And, you know, not many people in a normal setting expected the Blue Jays to be competitive this year, but 60 games, it almost feels like anyone can be competitive this season. And you listed them as a team that you're excited to see what they can do this year. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously a huge advocate of Vladdy Jr., and we talked to Kevin Biggio, like that young core. I mean, like that young core outside of the White Sox, you're talking about two of the most young, exciting cores in baseball. And I kind of look back to the Kansas City Royals teams that went to the World Series in 14 and 15. You have these groups of guys that they came up the ranks together in the minors, and then it all came together at the major league level. And, you know, they get to the World Series in 14 and finally get over the hump in 15. I can totally see that happening in Toronto. I can see that these guys are going to be universally all contributors at the major league level. I think I actually had the Blue Jays were a dark horse of mine to sign Gerrit Cole. I think that Gerrit Cole was a guy that it just made so much sense if they went out and if you were ever going to spend the money, now's the time to do it. So I think obviously the Yankees were the heavy favorite and he ended up there. But if there was ever a time for the Blue Jays to pull the trigger on a big free agent acquisition, I think that that's the guy that you make the statement and say, you know, we're going for it. But I still think that the Blue Jays are going to be a force to be reckoned with even without a guy like Gerrit Cole.
Jared, with a 60-game season, is it almost the naivety of a young team that doesn't know any better? And, you know, I played for a really young team in the mid-80s with the Flyers, and we didn't really know any better. We just went ahead and went to the finals. I mean, almost by not knowing what it took to get there.
Right, that's it. And in a 60-game season, something like that can happen because, you know, we mentioned the Yankees. That's a team that when you have all these expectations and you've spent the money and they got within a game of the World Series, but then you've seen the Nationals last year. They got off to a very slow start. Teams that do that, despite how good they may be, you don't have the time to recover. So that opens up the door for a team like the Blue Jays. I mean, if these guys are out there and they know that people are going to be talking about the Yankees, people are going to be talking about the Tampa Bay Rays, and if they don't get off to the starts that they need to get off to in order to have a successful and sustained success over 60 games, you could see a team that is young and that is just going out there and having fun because that's what the expectation is. I mean, I don't think that many people are saying, oh, this is the year that the Blue Jays put it together and get into the postseason. I think that they see that in the future for sure, but is it possible to sneak in there when you do have a 60-game season? I definitely do think so.
He is the host of the Starting Nine podcast. He's also an MLB writer for Barstool Sports. Jared Karabas joining us on Overdrive. And the most popular word to describe testing in Major League Baseball today was a complete mess. Are we overreacting by seeing what we did see today? Or is this maybe an example of why it's going to be so tough and almost impossible for Major League Baseball to pull off what they're trying to pull off with this 60-game season?
Yeah, I definitely think the logistics behind it, that was always going to be an issue because I just didn't think that they were going to be entirely prepared for what it would take to facilitate having a major league season. Obviously this is very new to everyone. There's really no protocol that they can kind of just jump into that previously existed. They kind of had to come up with something from scratch. And I think we're kind of seeing right now the obstacles that are in front of these teams, the league, in order to execute a season. I did not expect this to go off without a hitch. I didn't see it. So if anything, I'm kind of in a way glad that it's happening now because you're obviously going to have these learning experiences and you can make adjustments while teams are in quote unquote summer camp. I would rather have these bumps in the road now then have them happen during the season when you're talking about having a major league schedule that you have to follow. And if you do have these specific teams that have to shut down their training facilities because, oh, we don't have enough tests or the test results didn't come back the way that we wanted them to, or the tests are taking too much time to come back. So practice is canceled or practice is optional. You can't have optional baseball games. You can't have games get canceled because of testing. So I think now is the time for them to figure this out and see what works, see what doesn't work, so that by the time the schedule starts in July 23rd, 24th, then now you're kind of cooking with gas.
You know, there are so many questions, Jared, about return to play. And when this all started, when no one knew how long seasons were going to be, and it seemed to me, from a practical standpoint, like the hub system, with the way some of those spring training facilities are built, would have been perfect for baseball. To put half the league in each of a couple of hub cities with, you know, where teams surround an area, and you had multiple ballparks, and it seemed to me it would have been perfect. But that was when they were talking a much longer season. Do you think if they had a revisionist look at it and they said we're only going to be 60 games, that the hub might have fit better with baseball?
Yeah, I think the issue is you're going to get a lot of these veteran players that, you know, they'd like David Price, perfect example. You know, you have a guy in his mid-30s. He's got two young kids. He's married. He's won a World Series. He's won a Cy Young Award. He's made his money. And it's like, well, at the end of the day, I'm just going to decide that it's not worth it. Like, if they don't want their families to be living with them in these, you know, little mini cities that they're talking about, then every player has the right to opt out. And, of course, if you're not a high-risk player, then you don't get paid. But what about the guys that really don't care if they don't get paid because they already have their tens of millions of dollars in the bank, so it's an easier decision for them. But those are the players that fans want to see. The guys that are making the big money, those are the stars. And I think the stars are the players that everyone tunes in. Of course, you're going to support your team regardless, but you're tuning in to watch the stars. So if you have a less favorable scenario that big-name players would want to participate in, then you might run into a problem where now guys are opting out left and right, not because of the virus or whatever else. It's now I just don't want to like live in that situation. But I do think that I don't want to call it likely, but I think that it's certainly possible that we could see something like that for the postseason. I think if we're talking about a second wave, or we're talking about numbers spiking because of the summer and everyone being out and about, by October, I think that there is a chance that we might see the postseason played at a neutral site, which wouldn't be the worst idea. I think it'd actually be, you know, and Scott Boras talked about this. This is actually his idea to have like a World Series week where it's kind of like the Super Bowl and they have it in like a different city or whatever. But I think for this particular year and under these circumstances that you could see something like that for the postseason.
You know, it's tough to talk about silver linings right now, but if they're able to play out this year and crown a World Series champion for a sport that has been so stubborn with its traditions and unwilling to embrace some of the rule changes that they are incorporating because of, you know, the situation in the world right now, do you think this is a positive for baseball as they try to attract a younger fan base that isn't maybe inclined to sit and watch a baseball game for 3.5 hours?
Yeah, I think it's a catch-22. I think that there are some negatives and some positives. I think the negatives are obviously that it would have been nice if they had gotten to this agreement sooner and that they weren't fighting over money while people were dying. I think that that was sort of a big turnoff for baseball fans. But on the positive side, I think that a 60-game season, it's something new, it's something different, and could it be exciting? Absolutely. Like we talked about earlier, you know, if you do have these, you know, these big market teams like the Yankees or whoever that get off to slow starts and they can't recover, then you could see these surprise teams just get hot for a 60-game stretch, come out of nowhere, and now you have a postseason picture where there's a bunch of teams in there that maybe you haven't seen before. Maybe it's a glimpse at the future where it's like, well, maybe the Blue Jays wouldn't have made the postseason over a 162-game season, but they got hot for the first 60 games, and here we are. That now they have a shot at a title in 2020 where that wouldn't have been the case without the pandemic. So I think with you know, the idea of no fans, and I know that some owners have talked about maybe at some point we'll be able to have fans in the stands. I don't know how realistic of an idea that is. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of a turnoff as a baseball fan to not be able to go to the games. But a lot of people are still quarantining. They're still at home. So when you're at home, what are you going to do? Live sports. Great. Maybe I'll get someone that might have been a fringe or a casual baseball fan that maybe they fell off. Like, well, I'm not out at the bar this weekend. Maybe I'll turn on the baseball game. So there's definitely negatives involved here, but there's certainly positives as well.
Jared Carrabas from Barstool Sports joining us on Overdrive. And, you know, you're a Boston guy. You used to cover that team a lot. I know you cover the whole league now, but, you know, the obvious question could be, well, do you miss Mookie Betts? I'm not going to ask you that question. I'm going to ask you, do you miss Pablo Sandoval?
You know what? Here's the thing. I don't. I really genuinely just don't like Pablo Sandoval. I don't like him at all. This kind of blew up on Twitter the other day, and I didn't think that it was going to blow up the way that it did, but I honestly don't care. I think, you know, with that guy, everyone was like, well, you got to stop fat-shaming Pablo Sandoval, and that's so mean. And it's like, well, do you think I'm doing that because of what he looks like physically, or do you think I'm doing that because of other reasons? Like, maybe I just genuinely don't like the guy because of his attitude in Boston and the way that he carried himself and some of the things that he said in the media. I mean, there's layers to the bad taste in my mouth that I have for his tenure in Boston, and he's an easy target. So he's kind of been my arch nemesis for about 5 years now. It's kind of like Madison Bumgarner and Yasiel Puig. Well, just any time that we cross paths, we're going to get into a fight, and we crossed paths on the 4th of July, and it turned into a big Twitter war. So it's I'm actually undefeated in that regard. So I don't think he would have much of a leg to stand on if he wanted to come back and retort.
Are you also not a big fan of pandas in general, or is it this just Pablo?
I think it's just Pablo.
Okay.
I think if I ever saw a real panda in real life, I'd probably pet him, maybe give him some bamboo. Is that what they eat? Is that bamboo?
Yes.
I'd probably give him some bamboo. But Pablo Sandoval, we've never crossed paths before. I would love to have a conversation with him if he's open to it.
Well, until that happens, you'll just have to have more great conversations with Josh Donaldson and current Blue Jays. And I know the market here loves your work and loves listening to those podcasts, the Starting Nine podcast, and also all your work on Barstool. Jared Carrabas, thanks so much for joining us here on Overdrive.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And hopefully, maybe as the season progresses, the Blue Jays start making some noise, we can do this again.
Yeah, we would love that. And we would just love some baseball right now at this point. But I appreciate it, Jared. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
And there you have it. Not a big fan of Pablo Sandoval, as you could see. But
yeah, it's interesting. I played with a rather famous player who, you know, his conditioning was always in question in Philadelphia, and that was John Kruk. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, a story about someone walking up to him one day and said, you know, you're a disgusting athlete, or you're a disgusting example of a professional athlete. And he said, I'm not an athlete. I'm a baseball player.
Right.
Very simply.
There are two sides of the, you know, because you look.
The legend of John Kruk.
He mentioned Yasiel Puig, like him or not, there's an athlete. You know, there's some pretty great athletes in baseball, but
a pretty good spot between Baumgartner and Puig.
It's not like he's not going after the minor leaguers, is he?
No.
He's really going after
the rock stars.
Yeah, the big names. So the schedule in Major League Baseball being released as we speak right now. Still looking for the Blue Jays schedule, and it may have come out, but it looks like game times for the Jays would be at 6:40 Eastern. They'd be a little bit earlier. So that's, you know, you get to bed a little bit earlier, I guess. But we'll recap that. We'll also recap the big news from the NHL and the NHLPA tentatively agreeing to an extension for the CBA. And also Patrick Mahomes, his 10-year extension is worth up to $503 million. $500 million. For your Super Bowl champion. All that and more. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Dave Poulin. This has been you want to call this a Fire Up Monday?
Come on, we've got news to talk about. If you're in for Brian Hayes, am I in for both?
Yeah.
Jeff O'Neill and Jamie McClellan?
Yeah, and you brought
That's
it.
That's a lot of pressure. That is a lot of pressure.
And what is
Well, it's just so exciting to have current news to talk about, like real news and positive news.
And what does this continue? What trend? Big news happening when Brian Hayes is not at work, right?
I totally forgot about
that. We got Patrick Mahomes really to kick off the whole show. And Patrick Mahomes was like the gift that kept on giving throughout the show, because Adam Schefter just kept giving us little nuggets.
The money kept going up.
And yeah, the money kept going up to, it's now over $500 million.
I had it actually at 540 at one point. I don't know where I was getting that. But,
oh, my goodness.
You know, and you're starting to think of what an NHL franchise used to be worth. I mean, in the not-too-distant past.
Patrick Mahomes is going to bring a franchise to Kansas City with that money.
Well, it's funny because I remember at one point someone had what the owner considered a ridiculous, you know, asking for a contract, and he said, I'll just give him the team and make him pay his own salary because he'll never be able to do it.
Right. You know
that? And that was the adage. But, you know, it's just it's amazing. The way the deal is constructed, I think, is really smart. It's tied to the salary cap on an increasing basis, and it's got a bunch of guarantees in it, you know, that, because that's the big thing about NFL contracts is they're not guaranteed. So in the past, you could get cut partway through a contract and you got nothing.
Yeah.
And then guaranteed monies became important, and they didn't want to know what the value of the contract was. They want to know what the value of the guaranteed money was. And those were two very different things. But this looks to be mirroring up pretty close. So big news for the NFL. But bigger news in the NHL.
Yeah, no guarantees when a tentative agreement is made. But the framework and of the CBA is there for an extension. It's a 4-year extension, so it's 6 years in total. And also the return to play, the dates, which we already knew, but this firms it up. July 13th, so next week, the start of formal training camps. July 26th, clubs will travel to the hub cities. August 1st, let's start the play-in round. And that could be the Maple Leafs taking on the Blue Jackets that date. So a lot to take in there. It's a ton of ton of work that was done over the last, I guess, a solid week now. When you think of Bob reporting on Canada Day, and we are just kind of waiting and waiting for the news that we got during today's show. And it's just great work on both the PA and the league side of things to hammer this out. And I'm sure a lot of sleepless nights to get this done. And if you're watching on TSN4, there was some of the information there as the NHL and the NHLPA released that statement just under an hour ago.
And great work by both sides. And right now, as we speak, the executive board of the NHLPA is on a call. The board of governors has to push it forward as well. And so this memorandum of understanding is in place between the two negotiating parties. So once it's okayed by the NHLPA executive board, which is one member of each team, and the Board of Governors, it will then go to the players, and they figure that'll be about 72 hours for the full player body to have their vote.
Right. And very quickly, MLB releasing their schedules, and the Blue Jays will actually play games on 20 consecutive days from August 21st to September 9th. They also have the third toughest schedule based on 2019 win percentage. So there you have it. That 20 consecutive games.
We got all the major sports contributing today.
We got it all.
How about that?
This was awesome, Pooley. Always a pleasure to work with you, and especially when we have big topics. Are you in again this week?
Thursday and Friday.
Okay.
I will be joining you.
We're looking forward to that. I'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. So 4 o'clock tomorrow, you know, we'll be chatting then.
We'll chat then.